Thanks for tuning in to your Day Off Podcast, hosted by your boys, Corey and Tony.
I think by the end of today, I might have another best friend.
They're committed to making you fall in love with the hair industry, one podcast at a time.
You're going to grab a lot of information.
Yeah, you're going to learn a lot.
Presented by Hairdistry.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is it.
Your Day Off Podcast will begin after a word from our sponsors.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Of course, I'm sitting with my friend Tony. What's up, buddy?
Oh, now just a friend.
Oh, sorry, my best friend Tony.
Oh man, now my feelings are hurt.
Have we ever done it the same ever?
Probably not.
Probably not. No.
Hey, well, at least one of us haven't.
What? Fair.
Right.
Fair enough. But you know, it's a tune in next week and see what we're gonna say. So dumb.
What's up, brother?
What's up, man? Hey, this is the wrong word. I'm excited about this month. So what we're doing this month, in the great month of October, is that we're coining it as Hairstylist Inner Health Month. And what we want to do is we want to put out a lot of content on this month, every Monday on your day off. We want to put out a lot of content this month just to talk about like inner health and for the industry. I mean, I don't know. To be transparent and all that, we're coining it inner health because to me, inner health feels more proactive in the conversation.
Absolutely. And you know, everything gets labeled or stereotyped, and you know what I mean? And we don't want to kind of fall into that category because that's not what it is. You know what I mean? It is. Let's focus on inner health and inner well-being. And you know, we all go through seasons.
Ooh, I like that, Tony. You're right. We all go through seasons.
Every single one of them.
I was just looking this morning for a tattoo idea. And my tattoo idea is, I think I'm gonna get a tattoo like on my thumb or something. And it all just gonna say is, this too shall pass. But I was trying to find like the Latin word for that. This too shall pass, you know, because like you were talking about seasons, like whether you're in a really great season, this too shall pass.
Yeah.
Right. Whether you're in a really like negative season, this too shall pass. Right. Or even if you're in a neutral season, this too shall pass.
And you call me friend again, you shall pass too.
Fair enough, best friend. How come like a friend like gets boosted up after a death threat?
Right.
What kind of relationship is this? That's crazy, man. I feel like a battered wife here.
Right.
That's so messed up.
I feel like a forgotten husband. Exactly.
You are a forgotten husband. So all jokes aside, we're bringing in one of our dear, dear friends. Someone that actually like, it's one of the, for me, it's one of the like coolest things about starting the podcast is that we now have like a real legitimate friendship with someone who I've idolized or certainly admired, at the very, very least admired, for many, many years. So now to, you know, kind of be in like this space and go like, oh, this dude's my friend. Like we talk a lot on the phone just to talk or just to chat, about the industry and other things. So, I'm really, really excited, to bring on, our dear friend, Michael Cole today. We did a podcast with him back, I think it was 2018.
Yeah,
it was October 2018, and when we kicked off Sober October, if I'm not mistaken, it was kind of the first time he had ever talked about his sobriety in a public forum. I know that he had done it with friends and stuff, but in a public forum is the first time that he kind of he ever talked about it. And you know, I was just honored that he picked our space to do that. So today we're gonna continue that conversation. You know, here we are 5 years later. We're gonna continue the conversation, but as opposed to like focusing so much on like, you know, Michael's addictions and Michael getting sober, we're gonna talk a lot more about how he's maintained his sobriety and the importance of that, and also how that affects his inner health. And then hopefully you guys can take something away from it, to hopefully there's some tools in there for your own inner health, or certainly for your own inner conversations.
Yeah, I think there's going to be just a bunch of learns. Just, you don't even have to be addicted to alcohol or drugs or anything, you know what I mean? Anything that you're struggling with, I have a feeling that some of these things that you'll be able to apply to your life and just, you know, be able to stay strong, whatever you're trying to get through.
That's a very, very good point that, you know, it's not just about the addiction necessarily or staying for there, but it's just, you know, I think where we're going to end up at the end of this, and I hope I'm wrong, because I hope we get so much further, but, you know, is that sobriety is mental health, right? Or inner health. Let me go back to the branding. It's inner health. So, you know, anyways, instead of us jabbering on, let's bring on the guest of honor. Mr. Michael Cole, welcome back to your day off. What is this, like our 10th time?
Oh, man, I don't know. But I always look forward to it. I love geeking out with you two. I just, I always have the conversation after the conversation with myself, of course. And I go, what just happened there? We just hit these streams of consciousness that are just real surprising. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the universe has in store for us today.
Hey, we just appreciate, you know, when 5 years ago, when we were just two knuckleheads trying to start a podcast, that you were open enough and embraced us into your community. And we just, you know, want to just say thank you. And we love you to death, brother.
Oh, well, you've been paying me back ever since. it's been glorious to stand and watch your, you know, your brand spreading. I knew you when it was a glimmer in your eye. And now being in your presence synergizes whatever brand I have left in my ride. So thanks for continuing to hang out with me. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Michael. And you know, even, you know, let's go back to 2018 real quick. And again, if you haven't heard that podcast, I highly recommend it. It was Sober October 2018.
It was powerful.
It was a powerful, powerful thing. We definitely shared some tears and we shared some hugs and you know, we even had a little moment there where the conversation got a little heated, but only with love, right?
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that in the sense that like we could kind of break bread like that as well. But so. You know, Michael, again, you kind of talked about your story about, you know, your addiction issues and when you got sober and how you got sober. But to me, that's not the hardest part. The hardest part is not getting sober. The hardest part is maintaining sobriety and what that means. So, I mean, that's kind of where I see the conversation going today. But I'll throw the mic to you because you're the man that says so much with so little words.
Mm. Well, thank you. You know, this conversation it's not secret, at least it isn't anymore, but it's always, always, always sacred. And because I continue to watch what the conversation has done to me and watch what the conversation does to people that are in the conversation. So let's get at it. You said something about, you know, in my community, it would be, you know, the idea is to stop whatever we're stopping. You know, we're engaged in, you know, self-limiting, self-defeating, self-destructive, whether you want to call it a way of being, behavior, and it's blowing up our life. So to stop it, you know, putting the plug in the jug, getting that part on hold. But then there is, okay, I stopped, and then there's, let's stay stopped. And then once we can stay stopped, let's learn how to live stopped. And that to me is where the conversation gets rich. And again, this, you said it earlier, the conversation transcends overuse, abuse, use of alcohol and drugs. You can apply this to anything. And when you really look at the application of it today, I think at last count, there was just inside of 200 communities that these principles or whatever you want to call them are being used, where people just kind of show up and I'm struggling with this aspect of my life. Some people call it emotions. My emotions are managing me. I'm not managing them in my life. It's, you know, there's a lot of drama in it. At any rate, I remember the value proposition that was dropped on me early on. And I said, okay, so I want to stop. I want to stay stopped. And I want to learn how to live stopped. And the value proposition was, Michael, if you come in and you work whether we call them steps, whether we call them principles, which basically I like the word principles more than steps because it's universal. If you work the principles of the community and allow those principles to work in you, if what happened to us happened to you, your life will get exponentially better than however good your life was before, you know, you blew up your life or before that part of your life went away. And that was so profound. I said, you got to say that one to me again, because that's a value proposition. That's an elevator pitch. If I've ever heard one, work the principles, let the principles work you. And if what happens to others happens to you, your life will not just get better. It's exponential. And the other word that we use for that is transformed. Your life will get transformed. Now, and then the whole truth was, if that happens to you, you will stay. You will stay because you'll go, ooh, it's not, you live happily ever after. Your life gets exponentially better is as much present tense as past tense. And you look forward, you know, some of my teachers would say, because I go, you've been in the conversation for 50, 60 years. What's next? And the answer is always the same. Until it's my turn to die, I'm going to see how far this will take me. It's never about how far I can get, because getting implies that I've got something to do with it. But how far this thing is going to take me, I look forward to seeing that. Now, I was also warned, if that doesn't happen to you, and there are many people it doesn't happen to, you will not stay. You will go back to whatever it was you were doing, being, and using before you got here, because that's the only way we know how to live.
Well, if I remember correctly, from our first conversation, Michael, like you were in the stay for 12 years and then you fell off or something like that.
Yeah, I was in it for just about 4 years.
Okay.
And then because I moved too far away from the conversation. So you need to be in, there's a community of people, you know, I mean, there's our world, we go to work and there's a whole bunch of people in our world. Most of them are in the worldly conversation, but there's this conversation and there are communities, I call, you know, pockets of light. And I go there frequently so that I can remember longer before I forget. And when I do forget, to remember sooner than I would otherwise. And that's what happened to me. I got too far away from the conversation and I forgot. And then before you know it, I was back in, I was back to using my ways of being that I was using before, because it was the only way I knew how. And then sooner or later, I didn't come back. I was brought back. You know, there's natural consequences that come out of our self-defeating way staying unchecked. And those consequences over time are called crisis. You know, my pants are on fire. My life's on fire. My hair's on fire. I'm saying, help. I'll do anything. Not to have a better life, but to just, you know, survive and sustain. And of course, that happens. And then you go, and oh, by the way, these same principles will help you more than sustain. They will, today in my business life, I would say, number one, it is my secret sauce. End of story. People go, how do you keep doing it? You know, whatever you want to call it, reinventing, rebranding, reimaging, you know, finding the next right answer, jumping the next curve. They'll go, are you plugged into Google? You plugged into, you know, OpenAI? Like, what? WTF. And it's like, well, no, I'm just, there's a set of principles that I practice, a community that I belong to. And whatever it is you see coming from me, you need to know it's coming through me. You just don't happen to be in here with me, but it's coming through. So I want to stay in that flow, man.
I love that, man. You know, I don't know how to phrase the conversation. So I'm looking for a little bit of support here, Michael, but the principles that you learned within your recovery or, you know, in getting sober, like how have those transcended into, you know, not just directly related to alcohol or to addiction. Let me back up to addiction, but how have those like for like daily, yeah. You know, inner health kind of stuff. Like, how have you used them, or what principles have? And I want you to be specific about.
Okay, good. I'm loving this because really now that I'm kind of post everything, post L'Oreal, post Summit, and I'm in the last run, and I can talk. I can now talk about what I want to talk about and not have to be concerned about what about these people that are giving me money. So I am having this conversation, but I can't bring a lot of the conversation as it is into business with me because it's unsettling. People aren't ready. It creeps people out. So I take principles, like one of the principles that are inside of any recovery model. And a principle, by the way, is it's a truth that is self-evident. So there's no mystery in a principle. So if a principle really is a principle and you begin teaching, talking about it and raising awareness in somebody else about this principle, somewhere in that conversation, their aha is a BFO, a blinding flash of the obvious. They're going, oh my God, that's so true. You know, I never heard it put in that context. I never heard the words, but that is so true. And that's where, you know, I don't have to pitch you on this. Now, it's just we need to get more intentional and more conscious about how we practice the principle. But as we do this, we go, gee, any traction I was getting on this before, it just blows up. So one of them is, and I'm actually doing I now do books on Reel on my Instagram page. So I'm doing this little mini book or books on carousel. It's called The Book of Acceptance. So acceptance is a principle. And I'm defining it in real, real, real simple language. One is, first of all, acceptance is for me, and this is all about my own experience. So yeah, I'm sure you could get experts on acceptance and saying, no, he's full of it. He's off target there. But I'm just bringing I'm not a certified doctorate in acceptance, but I've been in recovery now 25 years. So I'm saying that I've been practicing this idea for 25 years. Here's what I bring to the table. One, it's an attitude. It's an attitude. It's a freaking mindset. So, and it's unlike, let's call it your common mindset. And the attitude, basically what it says is when there are any situation in my life, I'm going to look at that situation first and foremost from an attitude of non-judgment. So I wouldn't look at a situation and call it, this is really shitty. This is making me crazy, and it's awful, and it's terrible, and it's unfortunate. Not that you can't find a whole bunch of other people that'll come and co-sign that. I'm just saying, well, what is the situation then, damn it? This situation is what this situation is. Mm. Now, that's foreign to a lot of people because we're used to just either or. This is either great, I love it, it's cool, it's awesome, or this sucks. And I'm saying if you're gonna put on acceptance as an attitude, as a pair of glasses, I'm going to go into this situation. And when somebody says, well, what is this? Well, it is what it is. So that would be number one.
Is this the same principle of, go ahead.
Well, all right, so once I'm there, it's like, okay, then what? Well, now the attitude of non-judgment is supported by what's my intention? And my intention is whatever this situation is, I'm going to bring my motive is I'm going to see if I can make the best of it. I don't need to even have that figured out. But I could ask the question, what do I need to do to make the best of this situation? Well, until what? Until it changes. Because it'll change. It's got to change. Well, how do you know that? What are you, psychic? It's because, no, it's evolution. This is kind of sort of how the universe is set up. Everything is transient. So now if that's what it, and I want to do all that without complaint. And if I stay a non-judgment, I won't complain about it. Now I can talk about acceptance as a law that says what I can accept. Well, let me start the other way. What I resist will persist, because the opposite of acceptance is I'm resisting reality rather than accept. What I resist persists, doesn't get better. What I accept can be made better. And that's it. I mean, that's it. That one principle would be at the top of my list. And now I can pass the test. I can go, wow, you just gave a great talk on acceptance. Yes, I did. Can you practice it as good as you can talk about it? No, I'm a student. So I don't bat 1,000 at practicing acceptance. I get amnesia all the time. But you come to conversations, you hang out with people that have adopted this. All of a sudden you got a community of people that practice acceptance. Wow. Anyway, I'm done. I'm ranting now.
No, yeah, that was good. When you first started talking about it, Michael, it reminded me of the old Chinese proverb. I don't know if it's a proverb, but it's a parable about we'll see, you know, about we'll see, you know. So the Chinese farmer who's all the horses ran away, and they all of his neighbors came and go, I'm so sorry, your horses. And he goes, we'll see. And then the next day the horses came back, but now the tribe is, or the herd is twice as big. You know, when there's value. And then, you know, the next day, as his son is, you know, wrangling the horses, he breaks his leg, and the neighbors go, oh, I'm so sorry. And he goes, we'll see, you know. And then the next day, you know, the Chinese army came and took all the worthy boys, and he got left for all them to get murdered and, you know, for all them to die in war in battle. Anyways, it goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
The proverb is, we'll see. You know, we'll see if this is a good thing or if this is a bad thing, but we can't predict the future to know what it is. So we just accept it for what it is.
What did you say 10 minutes ago? Was it this too shall pass? Say that? Yeah. Yeah. And the other twin to that is, stay tuned, more will be revealed.
That's right.
You know, it's so easy to forget this. And I don't know about you, but I wasn't brought up this way. I was brought up to, you know, if it's going to be, it's up to me. And, you know, you just white knuckle and you go, and it worked for a while. And then, you know, there's some trade-offs at any rate.
When you, through this inner health and recovery and staying recovered, do you use inspiration such as, like, you know, I'm going to have a better marriage, I'm going to have a better work life, or is it more like, you know, I'm going to have a better me? What do you use when you go through these things?
Well, what comes up for me, Tony, when I hear your question is yes, and, you know, yes to both, that I'm going to set an intention to have a better, you know, dot, 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 fill in the blank, better income, better marriage, better, better, better. Okay, great. So that's the intention. What's your action plan? I'm going to go to work. I'm going to use these principles to work on myself rather than, you know, like in a marriage. I'm going to use it to work on myself rather than to be so concerned about how can I help my wife work these principles? How can I, you know, change her? And I've done both sides, and I'm here to report my track record is better when the question, the pose on how can I use these principles to change me, because there's something that'll happen inside of that, my relationship with whoever, and they either change or we're both lifted out of that situation and life has something else in mind for us. So, and again, stay tuned, more will be revealed.
Michael, this is, so I don't, Here's my concern, especially what you're seeing a lot on social media right now, and it might just be what I'm absorbing, and I'll give that. So if I'm missing something, I give that I'm missing something. But so much of the mental health conversation on social media, certainly within the industry, is always how others affect us, right? It's always like, oh, I've got to set boundaries to my clients for this, or, oh, I've got to set boundaries to my coworkers of this, or my coworkers this, that's why I'm in this position, or my boss is this, and that's why I'm in this position, or that. And to me, it's, to me, when I read it, first off, I read it with empathy, because I also figured, I'm also feeling, and this might be a little bit arrogant, but like, have you put the work forward to yourself? Because here's what I know. I know that my life is much better when I'm not concerned about such things. You know, I know that my life is a lot better when I can control my reactions to how other people are, are treating me. And I put that in quotation. I do the Michael quotation mark, but how people are treating me, that my life is much better when I can, you know, control my own reactions and my own investment in that.
You're driving your own bus. You're not letting everybody else drive your bus.
Exactly. And I'm not making excuses why no one's getting on my bus.
Right.
Right. Yeah. 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 And what came up as I was listening to your kind of you setting the preface there, Glory, was that I would, my, you know, one of the things we learn is not only a consciousness, but a language that supports it. I come back to my own readiness. So if you want me to do something to accommodate you, and whatever that is, my style is to say, I hear what you're saying. I have an appreciation for what you're saying. I'm not in a place that of readiness that I can support that. I don't want to overcommit and under deliver on that. So right now I don't have the readiness, or I might even say willingness. Mm. Readiness and willingness are they're related, but I just lack the willingness. And I love you too much to not tell you that. Now, you might have a problem, I don't know, whatever that reaction is, and my heart will go out to you that you're having the experience you're having because of what I said is not a good experience. I can see that you're disturbed by it. And so my heart goes out to you. But I'm real clear about what I'm ready to do and not ready to do, or willing to do and not willing. And I don't need to work hard at explaining why before you get it. It's not for me that you understand it. I can explain it to you, but I've given up on trying to understand it for you. That's where you come in.
This kind of reminds me of an early conversation that I had with Michael when he was in a clamshell. And for you young people, clamshell is a cassette thing that Michael used to sell about, you know, like, you know, how to be a Forbes Fortune 500 one. Then, like, you know, Michael had a bunch of cassette tapes in that thing. Cassette tapes are these little tapes that you put. No, never mind. We'll get into
that. Oh, wow. Yeah.
But, you know, like Michael had so much wisdom in that. But, you know, if I wasn't ready to hear the wisdom, you know, then. You know, I'm not a Fortune 500 bazillionaire, you know, how many times, I can't even remember specifically when I first got in the industry and someone saying like, enjoy this while you're young, because this is a young man's profession, you know, whatever. But now, you know, now as a man in my mid 50s and my body's breaking down while I'm doing hair, I heed those words a lot easier now than I did when I was 22.
Yeah. The things we used to kind of poke fun of now, we're talking about with compassion and a heads up that we're world-class athletes and our body can perform at a certain level, a very high level, for a while. Is it a decade? Is it 2 decades? Is it 3? But at some point, you know, the law of physics takes over, and make your... Be mindful. At any rate, that's a different conversation.
A whole other conversation, exactly. Sorry if I sidebar, but you know, that's what.
No
that's
worries.
That's kind of what I did.
To go back about relationships, like I know, like with my wife and I, and this for our both of our inner health and the health of our marriage, we will like you know, she'll say black, I'll say white, but whatever, if it's more important to her than it is to me, then I'll go with that, and vice versa. If it's more important to me than it is to her, she'll take a seat back, you know, step back, and then allow, you know, whether I want to do this or do that or say this or say that. We make sure that, you know what I mean, if it's just for the better of the relationship, you know what I mean? Because
at the end of the day, it's not about your point, it's not about her point, but it's about the relationship's point.
Exactly.
You know, and what's the big picture here? You know, like are you going to blow up your relationship? But, you know, that's such a learned behavior, and I certainly applaud you and Brandy, because, like, that's such a learned behavior in that, like, what's the most important thing here? You know, I think you get to a certain time in your relationship to where you realize that I kind of remember when it happened to me, like, what's more important here? Is my point more important here, or is the long-term health of our relationship the most important thing here?
Yeah, I put, you know, I used one of the questions that I usually reflect is, how important is this for me? And depending on who I'm with and how much skin we both have in the game, you know, you start talking about a marriage. And it helps to humble me, but it goes back to the conversation a few minutes ago. Acceptance, the other active ingredient in acceptance is non-judgment. So when I'm able to look at a situation, it's not good, it's not bad, it is what it is. What do they call that? That's non-judgment. And I can have non-judgment with anyone, myself, and, you know, the people, places, and things is what put together a situation, and I can approach it. I can listen from that standpoint of non-judgment, and probably I'm going to have an experience of that conversation that I won't have if I'm in any kind of sense of judgment. And one of the experiences we have when we're in that place of non-judgment is we have insights. All of a sudden, we have a new thought about maybe a not so new situation. And you always know when you do it, because in that moment you get a hit. It's like something happened. You go, what happened? I just saw something that I hadn't seen before. I just I saw something to consider that I hadn't considered. And we don't know what that is, but those are the fruits of when you approach situations with acceptance and non-judgment, and we're doing more listening, but the listening is from non-judgment. I've seen people listen all day long because they were told, you know, you got to be a better listener. But if I've got a whole bunch of stuff going on in my head, my intentions are good, but it's not gonna, I'm probably not going to have the experiences that I need to have when I'm listening in order to help to move the ball forward.
I love that. And I just want to reiterate to anyone that's listening that it sounds like we have the answers here, but Michael brought it up earlier, and I certainly talk about this as openly as that I possibly can, is that as what we're talking about right now is the highlight reel of our life. And what I mean by that is that with all the principles that I try to live by, I only get it right 50% of the time. You know, the other 50% of the time, there's something else in the way for ego, or almost 99% of the time, it's ego that gets in the way of living into my best principles. You know, but what it does and what it's really good about is once you have the principles, is that it gives you a foundation to go back to. And it also gives you the principle to, and I know you said non-judgment, but I also think it's important to, like, oh, I probably shouldn't have said that to Tony, because that just wasn't, it doesn't get us down the street. I shouldn't have said that to my wife, because that doesn't get us down the road in our relationship, right, or whatever. You know, one of the principles that I do live by, try to, again, batting 500 or less, more or less, is I try to be in control of my reactions, and I try to be non-reactive to everything, because to what you were saying earlier, like, I can't observe while I'm reacting. You know, and a conversation that I had with myself earlier in life was that, have I ever been reactive to a situation and gotten a positive result? And the answer is, I am batting 1,000 there. The answer is always no. I've never been reactive to a situation and gotten a positive result. So then I had to ask myself a follow-up question, which is, why are you doing this if it's not serving you? Yes. Why are you being reactive if it's not serving you? And the more and more that I've done this, or I've kept this principle, you know, the less reactive that I am, just naturally, the less reactive that I am. But that doesn't mean that I don't get fired up and stuff. But what it does is when I do get fired up, I go, oh, this fired up means reaction. And like reaction isn't something that I'm going to stand for. So it allows me just to take that beat to kind of reassess where I'm at.
Yeah. I'm loving the conversation that there's so much that you said. I just want to unpack a couple of parts of it. One is, gee, why is it that we can only bat whatever you want to call the percentages? I don't know about you, but those times where I struck out, even though my intention was to stay in the game, it's my stuff got hooked. I got hooked. I'm human. So, you know, and these days I'm calling that stuff my baggage. Right. It's interesting. You got me kind of, I now in my day job and my philanthropic work / a little bit of things going on in beauty schools. I'm doing more teaching to school educators and students. And we don't call this conversation what we're calling it here. In school, we would call it TLC. And TLC is transformational life coaching. So anytime I'm, as a teacher, engaging you, a student, in the conversation, I'm really coaching you, not so much just about your business, but life. And through these principles, if you practice them, you know, your life gets better. And so one of the terms that we use is our baggage. What's our baggage? And my See Johnny Run definition, again, this is all in my experience in life, is baggage is the stuff that my past has me believing I am. So we're in this life journey and we go through life and life happens and we get messages, ideas about life that aren't necessarily either true or they're kind of distorted. And my baggage is I signed on to that and now that's in my way. So my baggage is what past life has me believe in, either I am, I'm about, life's about. And this conversation here is unloading and unpacking and unloading the baggage. Not that I can find new clothes, because what the baggage is covering up is what's always in us. I mean, that's what's so compelling about recovery. One of my first week in recovery, there was a phrase called, some of our members have tapped the unsuspected inner resource. So, and I'm going to say it again. Our members have tapped, they've woken up to the unsuspected inner resource. You call this, what did you call the conversation? Inner health. That there's something in me, inner health, that health is innate. It's who I am. I came into the world with it. These days I'm calling it the diamond, but my baggage disguises it. It covers it up. So as I unload it, I don't have to, okay, out with the dirty clothes, in with the clean, or out with the, it's like, no, what's always been in there, all of a sudden you see it, you discover it. And now life is about, how do I learn to use that to navigate life? And then how can I pay forward to others what somebody else taught me to do about this? Because that's the last tenet in recovery is pay it forward. Like if you were served and you woke up and your life got better, pay it forward. Somebody had to pay it forward to you, because if they weren't, you wouldn't be here. You'd still be face down in the mud with arrows in your back. So anyway, I'm
landing. But move forward. And you said, you know, it's been 25 years for you. I know it's been, 23 years for me, since I quit smoking, but if I see someone smoking or if I smell it, my addiction, my urge is very strong still after 23 years. It's easy for me to resist it, but I still crave it. After 25 years, do you still use these principles every day to make sure you stay in recovery, or is there times where it's stronger than other times?
Yeah, I would say a lot of the answers is yes and. So from a primal level, I use these principles to stay stopped, to stay, you know, to not relapse. But then while I include that intention, there's other intentions I have for these same principles. And that's the conversation that we've been having. It's interesting that you know, being around people that smoke or whatever, I would say to you, being around people that use, it's not difficult for me, but I see the implications, or at least I've been in business long enough. If I'm not part, there are communities that, you know, work hard, play hard. And this is not a judgment of those communities. There are people that are that operate at a very high level of functioning that are of the work hard, play hard school of thought. That didn't work for me. And but, you know, birds of the same feather flock together. And that's not my flock. And there's been times in my 25-year history that I know that because I'm going to leave the party now, or, you know, whatever that is, that there'll be some trade-offs there. And there are groups of people that I'm in, I would say the elephants in the room, but no one's talking about it. Or the elephants in the room, there's people that are stepping in, you know, elephant shit, but nobody wants to talk about, because it's too big of a conversation, so you just leave it alone.
Love that. I want to back up a little bit. I want to go back to the baggage thing, because you know, I'm using this podcast as therapy, I think, a little bit, but that's okay. That's what we do.
Me too.
Amen. So you know, and literally, like, over the last few months, you know, the conversation, the strong conversation that I've been having with myself is about rewriting my story, you know, because I've written my story about what my childhood was like, what my adolescence was like, what my whatever was like, and I lived in that story for a really, really long time. And every time I told that story, it reinforced that story, which is such a odd thing that we kind of do, you know, but kind of moving forward, like, how can I rewrite my story? And not that my story didn't happen, but the way that I once again, back to reaction, but the way that I've reacted to my story, how can I rewrite my reaction to that story and just write and to be able to rewrite what my future looks like, or was that here's where I'm stuck with now. And I'm hoping at some point I can evolve past this, is that I don't know how much of my story is true. Like, I've written it and I've talked about it so much, and my emotional connection to those stories, and I've told it so much that I don't know necessarily where the truth is. And by the way, I don't know if there's truth in anything. Like, I don't know if my story is true. Here's a story that I'm trying to relate with. But I remember when we first started it might have been when we had you on, Michael, but I remember Tony's brother talking to you and saying, like, that's funny because my childhood I remember differently. Didn't he have that conversation with you? Which is interesting. And not that either one of them are lying, or not that either one of them aren't telling their truth, but we don't really know what the truth is. So anyways, using that as the example, like, I don't necessarily know what my truth is, because I've told my story so often, like, where is the truth, you know? And does this truth serve me or not serve me? And if it's not serving me, then what story can I write moving forward that does serve me?
Yeah. Wow. It's a provocative, it's a deep, profound question. I'm going to bring to the table what I bring to the table in my experience with it. One, my answer to part of that is, what is true? What is the true story? And I'm going to suggest, in the tenets of the models now that I embraced, my story was written for me before I began, when I was brought in. I mean, if I really buy into, sign on to the idea that inner health, as we're calling this, and which, by the way, I think is the highest practice of self-care. I just wanted to get that in so I wouldn't forget. Like, when that, I got so lit up when you talked about inner health. Inner health, if there was an award for the highest practice of self-care, inner health, or whatever you want to call that, wins it hands down in my book. Anyway, getting back to the truth, I am the diamond, or I am innate health. It's and you know, there's books of ancient writings that point to that. We're made in the likeness and the image of the universe, if you will, life. So that we come in there, and then through that, things get covered up, and you can call that whatever you want to call it. I'm just going to call it baggage, because it's a word that's used a lot. They brought a lot of baggage to the salon, right? And the baggage is the stuff that I was led to believe, based on the ride, that really, if it's true, it's not the whole truth. And there's one thing better than the truth, and of course that's the whole truth. And that while that piece of baggage served me, it helped me to survive. There was a time in my life that it got me through that. Now that was then, this is now. And it's now, it looks like it's holding me up. I need some help waking up to that, and then begin to let go of, give up, release my attachment, not be so identified with that. And what happens after that? I don't need to find truth. I just remember again that, okay, I'm looking forward to seeing how much of my inner health, what new forms that manifests in. And that process, by the way, in recovery is called surrender. So living from a place of surrender. My confession to you is, in business, I don't like to use the word surrender. In spiritual communities, it's fine. But in business, surrender creeps people out. So I basically say, having less of my identity tied to ideas, and having more of my identity tied to the truth, or at least what I believe to. What's the truth again? Oh, I'm the diamond. I'm the innate health. I'm the unsuspected inner resource. I'm made in the image and likeness of life, with a capital L. And I need to be reminded of that constantly. It's interesting. One of the practices in recovery is some sort of quiet time, mindfulness, meditation, quiet time. And people say, how often do you pray? And I go, well, kinda, but not to. Well, how often do you do that? And I would say, no, they don't say how often. How do you do that? Like, how do you do, like, what is it? How do you do it? And I go, well, the first answer is constantly. Constantly. You think that whatever it is we're doing is we're sitting in a chair and being quiet for 10 minutes. It's like, no, that's the on-ramp. The real work happens when, you know, the bell goes off and it's time to go to work. Whatever it was I was intending, that just sitting down for a few minutes would get me to that place. Now I got to take that space with me and live life. So as you said a few minutes ago, I'm not so damn, what did you call it, at the mercy of my impulses. Like I'm a little bit better at controlling the impulse. And which, by the way, impulse is, in recovery, is the inner urge to act without conscious thought. And I have a shit ton of impulses in me. And by the way, we call those, when you have too many of them, you're not no longer impulsive, you're compulsive.
Yes.
So we can geek out on the language, but at any rate, surrender, living from a place of surrender. And when sooner or later, some of the impulse goes away. I don't have to work as hard to not call you an asshole. You know, I might have to bite my tongue, but as little by little,
struggle with that.
That's part of Tony's practice.
Guilty as charged, Your Honor. I mean, we're human. So at any rate, I'm done.
But Michael, I mean, you addressed half of it, but then the other half is to rewrite the story moving forward. And that might be the most important part of it, at least with me. Like I knew that early on I had to give up who I identified as, who I was. I was the fun party guy, you know, but that stopped serving me at some point. And then now what's the story moving forward? And what practices are you using to, and maybe this is unfair to even ask you, but what practices are you using to change your story?
Yeah, I would say my story is changing, first and foremost. As I practice these principles, I'm observing. I'm actually watching my story change, being changed, rather, which is different than me rewriting the story. Now, I might say, wow, as I have a surprising experience, all of a sudden, OMG. What the hell just happened there? Something just happened. Something just came through me. Something, there was a result that, and so I'll sit down and maybe reflect, because it's all experience. I'd like to understand a little bit more about this very surprising new experience I had. I might even engage you in a conversation, because you get the conversation. Maybe you have a little bit of, maybe you had that experience, and together, all of a sudden, we're beginning to understand the experience we just had. Don't look now, but I call that the story. And it had happened through conversation. It happened through reflection. It happened through pausing. And the big thing that it happened through practicing the principles in, when you say all of our affairs, into the affairs of life. And we give ourselves the opportunity to pause frequently so that we can not only have experiences, but reflect on the experience that we had, so that that experience becomes understanding. In recovery, we wouldn't call it understanding. We call it wisdom.
Ooh, I like that. I like
you know, that. And then all of a sudden, the book of wisdom is rewrote. I was in there somewhere, but there was much about applying principles that got the story done rather than me. It goes back to, I'm going to see how far this practice will take me, which is different. I used to say, I'm going to see how far I can get on this ride. And it's like, well, okay.
Well, as you get older, you realize it's more of a journey than a destination, because our destination is in the ground. So you know, what are we doing before we get to our destination? It's much more important than any kind of destination, right? So,
and you guys, this is a deep conversation. I mean, trust me when I tell you, when I leave you two, and you know, when I won't go back, I don't engage your typical person in this conversation, because there's a depth in it, and it's, you know, it's not secret. Again, it's sacred.
So I want to go back to a word that you used, and that was change. And how I've had to, and I don't think I'm redefining change, but how I've had to look at change is different than I used to. Because change used to mean like, oh, there's new stuff happening. There's new stuff happening. There's new things. And sometimes we're resistant to the new things. And I argue that we're never resistant to the new things. What change really is the letting go of your belief systems. And if these belief systems are not serving you, then why are we giving them so much damn power over enjoying the new things, or not enjoying, but experiencing the new things?
Wow. Yeah, I you said a whole bunch there. Change, I'm going to call it transformation, is a particular type of change. So I'm going to say transformation is profoundly changing for the better. And that old saying, I don't know if you've heard it, you can change without transforming, but you can't transform without changing, you know. And that's the other thing that you said. What did you say? I gotta let go or give up some idea, some beliefs and stuff.
Systems. It's a belief system. It's letting go of belief systems.
Huge. It is the process of finding inner health, or the process of finding the diamond, is a process of subtraction, not addition. I need to subtract. I need to let go. I need to unpack, unload, and let go of this. Surrender this. Give up this. detach from this, no longer identified with that. Those are all subtractions. And so much of growth today, professional development, that's not necessarily so. You can grow without subtraction. You can just, what's the next skill? What's the next technique? I'll add it and I'll be fine. But I think as we age, we get to a place where growth via addition just doesn't get it for us anymore. We have to say there's baggage in me and I've learned to overcompensate for it. I now want to get interested in having conversations to become aware of what is that baggage, unpack, unload, subtract. So what I see underneath that is what's always been there. It's hidden.
That's amazing. I call it,
the diamond in disguise.
Yeah. That when, as you're saying this, this is what I'm visualizing in my head. Imagine a house and the person's a hoarder, right? And yes. all that stuff is emotion, baggage, stuff that you're not willing to let go. So it's just going to continue to fill up space. And then all of a sudden now it's overflowing and you can't have that clarity, you know, by letting it go, subtracting, releasing, living a little bit more of an emotional minimalist, you know, and freeing doesn't mean that you don't have the love and all that. You just, you have more room for it. You know what I mean? And you said it earlier, Michael, about it's, you know, to the change, it's evolution, right? So we've said it on the podcast 1,000 times that Muhammad Ali has this quote, if you're the same person at 50 that you were at 20, you wasted 30 years of your life. We all evolve hoping that we evolve into a better me, a better father, a better husband, a better friend.
Best friend. Know,
yeah. But it's all trying to, like, I love the analogy that you get is to subtract.
Hold on. I want to, first off, hold on, Michael. I gotta give my boy a hug because he quoted emotional minimalist. And that is like a power. That's like a power phrase. Thank you so much for giving me that, because that I'm going to use that as, you know, me and my mantras. That will be a mantra moving forward. Emotional minimalist it defines everything we're talking about in two words.
Yes, exactly. Tony I would say he's a inner health Jedi with his metaphor of a house. That we all have this beautiful house. It's a mansion, but I loved your term about we've been hoarding. It's just filled with a whole bunch. I'm not even going to call it crap. It's stuff. Yes. It's stuff. But as we begin to unpack and unload the stuff, taking stuff out of the house, we see something that's always been there. This is a beautiful house. It's just over the years, it was left unchecked. We kept dropping things off because we needed places to put it. And now my wife was here, she would say, she called it when it's up every week, it's time to clean the house. She says, before the house cleaning people come, I need to de-shittitize. Right. I got to get some of the stuff out of the way so that when they're not tripping on, and then they take it from there. But you're exactly. And that is subtraction.
I think this is a great time to quote the great George Carlin. And he says, our stuff is stuff. Your stuff is shit. So everyone else's stuff is shit. And we got to deal with your shit. We got to put up with your shit because you're not taking care of your stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, Jerry. I still, by the way, I still see his stuff on Facebook. On the you know, those little videos. There, he's always doing his stand-up stuff. I miss George Carlin.
Dude, it's amazing how, like, this guy's been dead for 15 years, but he's more relevant now than he ever has.
Has it been that long? Oh my lord!
I actually don't know how many years it's been. I just threw out there 15. I don't know. Could it be 5 or whatever? But whatever, it's more relevant now than it's ever been. It's almost like he had a crystal ball into his humor. But
I hope inner health catches on. Yeah, you guys are what you're doing, and what I love about this, because people that I work with are afraid that, okay, you're a coach, you're a life coach, but we're not therapists. We're not there to. And so, how do we? What's the Rubicon that we never cross? And for me, the answer is I'm an educator. I'm an educator of inner health. I'm not a therapist. So anything I'm going to bring to the table is educate. And educate, if you really go on an archaeological word, the root word for educate is educe. And educe is a word that says to wake up. So in the process of educating anyone, we wake ourselves, we wake other people's up to what? That there in us is in inner health, and there's some things that are covering it. And to the degree that I wake up to that, you know, what I can see, I can stop. What I can't see stops me. So it all, you know, there's just a jillion different ways of being poetic and describing this, but it's the same thing. It's your these principles will transform our life, and that's what's so exciting about it.
And you said wisdom earlier, and we truly appreciate your wisdom, bro,
for sure.
Like I said, there isn't a conversation that I've engaged both of you in where I left it and didn't look forward to listening to it, not to, you know, bathe in grandiosity, but there was a whole bunch of stuff that came to, I think, the three of us in the last hour or whatever that was surprising to me. And that's what we pointed to 15 minutes ago. You have these experiences. They're new, they're fresh. It's like, I didn't think that, where the hell did that come from? And it came from being in that space where our thinking was off, judgment was off, and that deeper place came through and took form. It's extraordinary.
It's amazing. We always appreciate our time with you, Michael. And again, I'll take this moment. I'll probably do this every time I talk to you, but I just take this moment to thank you very much for the friendship. Again, the offline friendship. I'm very grateful that we can have these conversations with a video camera running, but I'm mostly grateful for the phone conversations that we have, and for you to, that you've always made space and time for me personally. And I know you do the same for Tony. So I appreciate that more than I can possibly express, except to express it on a podcast that's heard by a few other people.
Ditto. And I really mean that. I'm not being trite. The feeling is mutual. Thank you.
That's awesome. Mr. Michael Cole, the great Michael Cole, thank you very, very much for joining us on the wisdom of Michael Cole.
Yes.
Thank you for the wisdom of Michael Cole. Thank you for joining us on your day off.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, share it with friends, give us a rating, and drop a review. To listen to all the latest podcasts, please subscribe from your favorite podcast outlet. And to stay connected on and off the show, you can follow us at Hairdistry on Instagram and all other social media platforms. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time. Peace and love.